Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Hello, Thrivers. Welcome to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate with Mark. How are you doing, Mark Johnston?
I'm doing well today. How about yourself?
I feel like I need to like shake up our intro a little bit because here we are on podcast like 141 and I tend to always start the same way. So, you know, got to figure out a way to like shake things up. Speaking of shaking things up, today we're going to be talking about how to reignite and deepen emotional connection in your marriage. So really excited to share some things with you guys. Some of it's going to be very specific to maybe where you're at, but most of it's going to be a really broad way that everyone can use to help things get going in their connection with their spouse. Before we get to that, though, we're going to share a client win of the week. I will share this one if that's okay.
Yeah.
This one comes from just an anonymous group member. They say, just wanted to post my win. I'm currently working through the program and utilizing the coaching. Things have been tense here since I found out my husband was cheating on me. It was so bad at one point that he wouldn't even use my car. All he would say was, I'm done. Well, since starting the program and working on my issues, I've noticed changes such as he now drives my car. We've driven in my car as a family, and today we made plans to take our children to the corn maze together. It might seem small to you, but it gives me hope. So really fun to see progress here. And like those that followed the podcast for a while, you know, we share the whole gamut of different kinds of wins. And we really believe in focusing on what's going right because it's so easy for our brain to focus on everything going wrong. So when we start to see some of these shifts of being willing to talk about things, being willing to spend time together, making invitations to spend time together, we see that as our second marker there. Not only have they hit the pause button, but now they're spouse is starting to take steps towards them, which is really exciting. And it's even more than hope. It's evidence that the process is working. And so our client here just needs to keep on the track and things are going to continue to go well for them. So excited. And thank you for sharing that.
Great.
All right.
All right. So I think we had a question in our Facebook group, right?
Yeah.
You know, we usually post these ahead of the podcast, just to get you all of your opinion on the topic, see where you're at, see if we're on the same page, just kind of see what everyone's thinking.
Yeah.
This time we had a question: what do you think you need in order to build emotional connection with your spouse? It's good.
I'd love to know. Also, as you're watching this or listening to the replay, leave a comment and let us know, what do you think? Like, answer this question right there in the comments. What do you think you need in order to build emotional connection with your spouse? Because we'd love to hear from you guys too. So yeah, Mark, what did we see? What were some of the answers about this?
Well, I saw some themes. I saw a lot of answers that centered on things like vulnerability and trust and communication. I like a couple of these in particular, but there's a few that were a little bit more of like an outlier. Donna is saying she needs a man that listens and understands, or Pete saying she needs to regain her emotions. And basically we had like some really good themes, like I said, that vulnerability, trust, communication. And we also had a fair amount that were like, okay, my partner needs to do this specific thing. They need to start feeling some stuff for me. There was a few mentions of like love languages, some themes there, but like I said, a lot of frustration about not knowing how to build emotional connection with your spouse who was distant or claiming that everything was fine. Or like I said, putting all that blame on that my spouse needs to change.
Yeah. I saw a lot of the same. One of the biggest things that I saw that I know we'll touch on was communication. To me, that was a really big theme. That in order to have this emotional connection, we need to be able to talk about things. So, Mark, what does an emotionally connecting relationship actually look like? Now, this may seem like an obvious question to some people, right? But the reality is that most people do not actually have this or they might experience it for a short time, but they don't sustain it long term in the relationship. And so let's talk about what that actually looks like so that we know what we're working towards.
Yeah, I think there are actually a fair amount of situations where we might share emotion, a lot of different kinds of relationships where that's the case. Like I think about the kind of work that we do, there's a lot of emotion that is shared. So like a therapeutic or a coaching relationship, is that really emotionally connecting? I would say that one person is generally able to open up on a deep level, but I think what's missing there is that it's not reciprocal. Yeah. Like it's generally inappropriate for a therapist, a coach, a psychologist to open up deeply about themselves. And I don't think that's the kind of emotionally connecting relationship that we want. I think other people have, friendships where they might share some emotions. You know, I think I occasionally here and there will share some frustrations or other things like that with friends or family members. But I still don't think that that's quite what we're looking at. You know, I noticed that those relationships where I am sharing, it tends to not be as deep, or I'm still holding something back. It's not. Yeah, I can't think of a better word. I don't know if you can, but it's not as deep.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about then? Like what, when we're looking for that emotionally connecting deep relationship with our spouse, what do you think most people are looking for?
Yeah, so some like really big commonalities would be a relationship that feels open and safe, trusting, like it feels secure to both of you. And like you mentioned, Mark, it shouldn't just be one-sided. It needs to be reciprocal, right? Yeah. And it should be authentic. We shouldn't be trying to force this connection or like faking it, right? And then affirming, validating, or accepting. So these are some of the elements there that most of us are looking for, a relationship where we can really be ourselves, right? We can feel accepted and we want our spouse to be able to do the same.
Yeah. I our topic though today, it's less so about, okay, what is a deep relationship, but it's a lot more about reigniting that or making it better. And I do think that if we're talking about reigniting, we need to briefly discuss, you know, why it went away. And then we absolutely will be getting into like, what do we do to bring that back? In my opinion, I think a lot of times emotional connection dies a bit or it goes away generally either from neglect or harm. And I'm gonna point out that might not necessarily be harm or neglect specifically from your spouse or from you. You know, I see a lot of cases where there's a difficulty in having that deep emotional connection when there's been childhood trauma or just trauma in general that's gone on for long enough. If it isn't neglect or harm, though, I would say that in most cases that there just simply wasn't a deep relationship in the first place. And, you know, it stayed more on the surface levels. People didn't open up. So like when we're looking at this, I mean, it makes sense that some of these things happen. This is just kind of a normal, almost to be expected in a lot of relationships, that at some point people are going to get busy and might neglect, or there might be little bits of harm here and there. But let's focus on neglect just for a second. What do you think really gets in the way?
Yeah. And I'm just going to preface this with like neglect sounds like such like a harsh word. Like we think about like neglecting a child or like neglecting your pet or something. And like those are like really serious things, but it's just really that other things get in the way. And this is very normal in a lot of relationships, but that doesn't mean it's good or healthy. Right. And so it's really like, you know, this deep emotional connection for all different kinds of reasons becomes less of a priority. It might be because of children, having children and just getting busy with life, jobs, career, sometimes hobbies or other interests, passions, sometimes even friends or other family members can get in the way. it seems like, and we've studied this before, you know, Mark, with like the age groups and like how long you've been married and like the tendency of like marriage decline always hits this mark right as like children start to usually enter the picture if they do, and jobs and career are like at their peak, right? And it feels like then you just start to take the marriage for granted. You just kind of assume that your spouse is always going to be there for you. You just kind of feel like, oh, I've got that, you know, taken care of right now. I'm going to do this, right? And this becomes really important. And sometimes you even might think, and I've heard this said many times, that I was doing this for you. Like I was really building my career. I was great creating this great life for us. Or I was so busy raising kids for you. But in the process of that, sometimes it gets not nurtured, the actual relationship, right? And another element that we see also occurs when there are these bids for connection and they just might go unanswered or unmet. And that might be because of obliviousness. Like you're just oblivious to your partner's bids for connection, or maybe your spouse was oblivious to you saying, hey, I'd love to watch a movie with you. And they're like, oh yeah, I got to get some work done. And then, you know, and then the night goes by and they never came. Right. Mm-hmm. And it could look like so many different things. Or it's just flat out like unmet, and that could be oblivious or it could be a little more even intentional. But either way, we're talking more about neglect in this first one than actual like harm. So it's kind of like this gradient level, right? Mm-hmm. We have a little bit of just distraction and obliviousness, and then all the way down to like intentionally doing things to kind of get at each other. So what do you think, Mark?
Well, you used a word there that I liked, Heather. And you were saying, okay, the connection became less of a priority. And I like looking at it this way, because most often it's not that there's intentional harm here. It's more like, what are we prioritizing? What important thing are we putting first? And so it's really easy for a lot of people, I think, to say, okay, I want to make sure my kids are taken care of. Or perhaps the kids are the squeaky wheel that keep coming up over and over again, having different needs. So it's so much easier to just say, okay, well, you know, we can't go out on dates. We can't have that time for each other because these other things are so much more pressing. And generally, though, like what we see is that these kind of needs, especially for emotional connection, when they go unmet, it tends to come out in unhealthy ways eventually. And that's, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, trying to figure out how to reignite some emotional connection, I imagine that's probably the case.
Yeah. So let us know in the comments if you feel like you have experienced this, right? Anyone who's been married for any amount of time, more than just the honeymoon phase, probably has at some point, right? And again, a lot of this isn't very intentional. I've experienced it in my own marriage and my own life. It's just sometimes things get a little bit lopsided and it's hard to give energy at 100% to everything. And so it's really deciding what is my priority, which we'll go into here in the next little bit. But let's talk about the second part here. So if it isn't so much neglect or maybe not prioritizing marriage as much, harm can be a huge barrier to having a deep emotional connection and can cause those things to deteriorate. So Mark, what are we talking about with harm?
Well, I think a lot of times it's when someone does make some bids to connect and there's some amount of judgment or a situation becomes unacceptable, or a person becomes unacceptable. I think a lot of times this is not, most couples don't intend for it to be damaging. It's more like, what are you used to? Or what is there a difference in personality dynamics? I get a lot of people where, you know, one partner is a little bit quieter and the other partner is a little bit more bold or brash very outspoken, and they don't think much of the little jabs here and there. But, you know, this can look like lots of little things, like are hobbies made fun of? Are there angry reactions to choices that are made? Is there a lot of nagging, judgment, blame, or criticism? Is there a lack of empathy or willingness to see the other person's view, like a controlling sort of atmosphere? And I think, you know, when we're looking at that emotional connection, it's really about intimacy or trust. How open or vulnerable can you be? And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, is when that vulnerability or that openness isn't treated with acceptance, it tends to shut people down and they tend to not share as much. And then you don't have that emotional connection anymore. So that's what we're looking for. It's a lot of that judgment, that blame, that criticism that really can kill off the emotional connection.
Right. Causes us to withdraw, put up the walls, right? Not mm-hmm. open up, not feel safe to be vulnerable, shuts down communication, and eventually can lead to a lack of even wanting to work on the relationship at all. Yeah. So if that's what causes emotional connection to deteriorate, then how do we reignite that emotional connection?
Well, I think it's really complicated. I mean, this is not a cookie cutter sort of situation, because there's a lot of different dynamics. There's a lot of different causes. I think we'd have a very different approach if the relationship is fine and it's just not emotionally deep and we're just wanting to have a deeper connection. I think it would be another entirely different situation if your partner's feeling hurt and has recently started pulling away and is limiting communication. I think it would be even a further different one if maybe you get a lot of the anger or criticism from your partner. Like, just right off the top of my head, I'd be like, okay, building up or just trying to deepen the relationship would be like identifying where we can be more vulnerable and open. You know, how can we make things more rewarding? If they're feeling hurt, then we'd be looking at apologies and we'd be trying to look at a lot of repair and looking at your behavior. Whereas if you're getting a lot of anger and criticism from your partner, we're looking at boundaries and we're like, do you get, like, and this is just me giving that first pass kind of like thought on, okay, what's the solution to these things? And it might not even be exactly that. It's a complicated question.
Right.
But I do, you know, like if you've listened to us before, you know that we like to look at what are the principles underneath everything. And I do think that there are some basic principles to making some better connection. Where do we want to start, Heather, with all this? What do you think?
Yeah, so make sharing safe is really, really important. If you want to deepen emotional connection, then we need to demonstrate that sharing is going to be acceptable, it's going to be safe, and it's going to be rewarding, and have our partner reciprocate that, right? And so this is really important. I've had times in my marriage, and I'm sure you guys can relate, where it did not feel safe to share. There's times when Ben felt like it wasn't safe to share because it wasn't rewarding. It wasn't sometimes acceptable. Sometimes it just didn't feel safe. So this is where we get to pattern interrupt some of those things. And we'll talk about that in a little bit too. To start to do things in a new way to build some of that safety. Now, Mark, I know you really like Carl Rogers, right? What does he have to say about this?
Yeah, I like talking about Carl Rogers. I think it's a great, what he teaches is great for relationships, but we've made this connection before. And I think, you know, Carl Rogers talks about what's an ideal situation for a therapeutic environment. And I think it fits really well for allowing for people to be open. Because Carl Rogers, his big focus was being centered a little bit on how people feel and like the relationships that they have. It's person-centered therapy, it's what it's referred to. So he said, okay, if we're gonna have a good therapeutic environment where your client can open up to you and share things, he says you need to make sure there's a lot of empathy. That he referred to the second item as congruence, but it's a lot about authenticity. Can people actually be who they want to, or be who they are? Can you as a therapist be who you are? And I'm talking about a therapeutic environment. We'll make the connection in a second. The third is having positive regard. He talked about it as unconditional positive regard, where we try to view the intentions of the other person as positive, no matter what the circumstances. But I'm talking about this in terms of a therapeutic environment, because all of these items were taught to create the situation where people can be open with each other. And isn't that what we're talking about in terms of a relationship? And so if we're saying we want to make it safe to share, I think Carl Rogers has a point here I mean, think about those moments when you've really felt like someone understands you, where you could be yourself and where being yourself was viewed positively. Those are absolutely moments where you're going to feel much more willing to share, to be a little bit more vulnerable, to be a little bit more open with your feelings. I don't know. What do you think that this looks like? You know, if we're going to have authenticity, if we're going to have empathy, if we're going to have positive regard, what does that look like in general, do you think?
So I'm going to be a little authentic and vulnerable here because I'm going to give an example from my own marriage. It was about probably a month ago. We were out at dinner up in Denver, and I just knew that I needed to come clean with Ben about a really bad choice that I had made. I had told him a half truth about something several weeks before that, and I was just beating myself up about it because I strive to be very honest, authentic person. And in this situation, it was kind of embarrassing. So I just didn't tell the whole truth, right? I just kind of let it sit and like make it look the story. You know what we do? We do it. We've all done this, right? We make the story seem a little bit better than it actually was and just kind of let them believe that and not share the whole thing. But I was just realizing that that was a big barrier for me. And it was keeping me up at night. Like, that is not who I want to be. That's not the kind of relationship I want to have. And so I just need to come clean and let Ben know. And that was really scary because we've been in a really good place for a long time. And I didn't want to like rock the boat, right? We get into patterns like this sometimes. I didn't want to stir the pot and then have us go and him withdraw or be hurt, you know? So I avoided it for a long time. But finally at this dinner, I was just like, okay, I'm just going to tell him. And I was crying and he, you know, I told him what it was and he met it with just a whole lot of empathy. And I felt like I could share exactly what I felt and why I did it, even though it was wrong. He understood even my reasons for why I didn't tell the whole truth to him. And he told me, you know, Heather, I want to know all of you, even the dark parts of you, you know, even the parts of you that are scary or aren't as pretty, right? I want to know all of you. And that's how I was met, was with just this unconditional positive regard, with a lot of empathy. And I was able to be vulnerable and feel safe in that. So it was incredibly rewarding to have shared a huge mistake that I made. And instead of having him withdraw or, you know, put me down or get really angry and upset, he was just had a lot of empathy and positive regard for me. So I was able to kind of be a recipient of what we're talking about here. And since then I have felt like just this weight off me, like, okay, why would I ever think I couldn't tell him something? Like, obviously he's demonstrating here that it's safe to share. He's demonstrating here that he's going to view me with positive regard. He's going to demonstrating here that he isn't just going to withdraw and go back to some old patterns, right? We are building a deeper level of connection and trust between us. Now, it wasn't always that way, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been afraid that he would shut down and withdraw and all those things. So this has been a work in progress, right? But for me, that was a huge milestone to experience that, to be so authentic, to be so raw, to be so vulnerable, right? And admitting I did something wrong and then wanting to work together to solve that. And for him to be there and be supportive and loving and have positive regard. So that's a very raw personal experience I'm sharing, you know, publicly. It's not easy to say, oh, I told a half truth and then I had to come clean about it. But that is what happened. And so it was a beautiful experience though, to come on the other side of that and have it met with love and empathy and this positive regard. Just one other thing I wanted to challenge everyone to, and I did this just in the last week before he left again, was try to turn every kind of criticism in my brain or negative story about Ben in my brain to something positive, which I know we're going to go into here in a little bit. So I'll leave that as a cliffhanger, but I want to challenge us to try to do a similar thing. So anything you wanted to add to that, Mark?
Well, I just want to clarify when you're saying that before Ben leaves again, to clarify,
oh, yeah.
Ben is working away from the home.
Sometimes. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. No, he's flying commercial. Yeah. So he's gone for extended amounts of time now. He will come back.
Yes.
It's not one of those, my dad went to get the milk story.
To add to that, to give it more of like a different, like not a personal example, but I want to point out, we have a lot of people come through our program where something like infidelity is the problem. And quite frequently, we're able to get the offending partner in to talk with us. And I can almost guarantee each and every time these people that are coming in who have been unfaithful, they almost always seem on their guard. And, you know, right off the bat, I know that, hey, if I want this person to work through some of the problems, or if I want them to open up, I can't come at this considering them the bad guy. And this is, it's a lot easier, say, from my position, because I'm not the one that's been directly hurt in these cases. But, you know, I'm going to pat myself on the back here for a moment and say, I do a really good job about having people who would normally feel judged be very open. And what, how do I do that? Is I allow them to share some of their hurt feelings, even though they're the ones that have caused harm to others. And I look at that and I say, okay, I imagine that there's some reasons why this was a hard situation for you and why you might have done that. And we have some empathy for how they feel. And what happens is they then open up a little bit more. They share more about what's going on, and it allows us to actually get to a point where we can heal. Now, eventually, you know, through the process, there does need to be accountability and whatnot. But if we're just talking about opening up and deepening that like amount of sharing, really, we got to pay attention to these principles right here. So next up, we're saying, we're saying we need to make sharing safe. I think the second part is, we talk a lot about this, Heather. We talk about controlling the narrative. I think it's really easy when things are going wrong, or when it's the relationship has become a bit stale, for people to misinterpret actions and assume the worst.
I
think this is just like a normal thing that we as people do. Every day we have to make judgments about what someone else's intentions are. And sometimes it's such a minor thing. Like we might be going through the, you know, the checkout aisle, and we're like, okay, well, this cashier, they have no intention. You know, they greeted me because they thought they, you know, because they're bored, or because they actually, you know, but if they show a little bit of emotion, we might judge that differently. We might say, okay, this person is just wanting to have some connection while they're doing this mundane task. We fill in the blanks, basically. I have no idea what the intentions of this cashier is. And, you know, but when the stakes are a little bit higher, we tend to make more charged judgments. I do think that while repairing damage or trying to direct the relationship in better directions, we absolutely need to be proactive about filling in that blank in most every circumstance.
Yeah.
So the question becomes here, Heather, like what kind of narrative are we trying to support? If we're trying to have this relationship where we're trying to deepen the connection, what kind of intentions do we want to put out there? What kind of story do we want to tell? What do you think?
Yeah, this is really a good one. And I'd love, as you guys are listening to this, to leave a comment of like, what story would you want in your marriage, right? What would the best, happiest relationship look like, right? And so, you know, that might be that you want that unconditional acceptance. I want to be loved for who I am. I want to be accepted for who I am, and my spouse, I want to accept them for who they are, and for them to feel like they can be their real selves and to feel safe there. Maybe it's that we're accountable to each other, right? That when we mess up, we hold each other accountable, and then we help each other overcome things, right? And that we love each other no matter maybe what is shared, right? So what is it that we really want to communicate here, and fill in the blank with that narrative instead of the blank of the story that we start telling ourselves, right? And so I'm going to come back to my story of the challenge that I had the week before Ben left to go fly again. Is that I still catch myself having some negative fill in the blanks. For instance, Ben's like, what can I do to help you? Because he's been gone for so long. I've been running the entire household, 8 kids alone for 2 weeks on it. Right. So he's like, what can I do to support you? I'm like, if you could put the girls to bed tonight, that would be great. Right. So we all know bedtime's at 7. So 7 comes, he's sitting on the couch on his phone. 7:10 comes, sitting on the couch on his phone. Right. I start to create a narrative. Ben doesn't really support me. I still have to do everything myself. Right. I start to fill in a blank about what the circumstance is. Right. And so my challenge to myself and my challenge to you as well is that we start to question those filled in the blanks stories, the judgments that we start to pass about our spouse and the negative feelings that we might have or criticisms, and start to shift that to, you know what, Ben really does support me. He said he's going to put the girls to bed tonight and I know he supports me. And I just left it at that. And sure enough, like a minute later, he got off the couch, put the girls to bed. Wasn't even a big deal, right? Was it right on time, like punctual, like I would do it? No, but does that really matter as much as long as it's done? Right? Why should I start to put a negative slant, like not unconditional positive regard on him for, you know, for something I don't know how he's really feeling, right? Like, just like what you were saying, Mark, we don't absolutely know exactly what their actions are. And we often assume the worst. So that's my challenge to you, is start to question some of the stories that we're putting on our spouse and the judgments and criticism we might be putting on them. And just start to shift the narrative of like, wow, it feels really great for them to support me. Wow, it feels really great that they care so much about our kids. And that might seem like a long shot from maybe where you are right now, but there are stories that you can start to craft about your relationship, even if your spouse is pulling away, even if they are having an affair. And when you start to, you know, work on this underlying narrative, things really start to change, and we can help you with that. Sometimes it can be, you know, takes a little bit of work to figure out what's going to be received well and how we're going to be able to fully change a very negative or unhealthy story. So Mark, I don't know, what about you? What kind of narrative is important to you to encourage this kind of like deep emotional connection?
Well, I'm thinking of my own relationship with my wife, Jen, and I know we end up, we end up having a lot of communication about that centers on validation around feelings. I think that's a really big one for us. You know, there are moments when, say, I'm upset or Jennifer is upset. We might even raise our voice here or there. And usually once everyone has calmed down, there's a moment where we say, okay, I get it. And this was an understandable reaction. We're essentially saying, hey, it's okay to feel things. I'll tell you that it makes it a lot easier for me to share like those moments when I'm not feeling quite as well. And, you know, when my wife would want me to share a little bit more. But I really think it depends a lot on the situation and, you know, what the struggles are. And where you'd like to go. I think for a circumstance that where one partner feels a little bit more controlled or like they don't have a voice, I think it's really important then to really emphasize the narrative that we consider everyone's opinions and that, you know, it's really important that you feel heard or something along those lines. So it's much more important to identify like what the concerns and problems are and, you know, develop a healthier narrative from there rather than for us to say, well, this is the narrative you should build up or that one. I think it's very unique to each couple.
Right. Yeah. It's something that you kind of craft, like we help our clients craft, because it's like your thumbprint, right? Your marriage and exactly where your personality is and their personality is and your history and everything. And then where you want to go is going to be very unique for everyone. And so that comes like into home messages. Any of you know that Mark developed here to reinforce that narrative. And that kind of brings us to our next point here, which is it's great to just have a narrative, but now the next level of really deepening this connection and making that narrative a reality is like demonstrate your narrative and connect the dots. So we do this both with like action and then with statements. Sometimes we call these home messages. And so yeah, Mark, share a little bit about what this looks like.
Sure. If you're really wanting to be to communicate that it's like, for example, rewarding to open up emotionally, essentially what Heather is talking about is like, how are we proving this to be true? And I find this is interesting because a lot of times I'm seeing like a lack of either the message being clear or the demonstration. I was actually just talking to someone yesterday, and they're, you know, I'm seeing both the husband and the wife, and the wife is working on this narrative that, okay, I'm not controlling. I can be very respectful of your choices and whatnot. And then when I had them both together there, he was pointing out like, yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. Like there's all these moments where you're saying that you want to respect my choices. And so I say, okay, this is what I really need support in. And you say, no. And so like we had a problem there, that the demonstration, it wasn't mirroring what the message was. And our general recommendation here is, you know, if you're going to go about having a specific message, having a way to demonstrate that, we generally try to avoid these passive goals. For example, if you're saying, hey, I want to prove that things can be more calm by not getting mad, and I'm going to be really upset with you if that's your goal, because these sort of passive goals that involve doing nothing are terrible. I think they're absolute trash, garbage sort of goals. There's all sorts of problems with that. I could probably talk to you for a good 20, 30 minutes about why these are so terrible, but it only gets noticed. A lot of times these goals only really get noticed when you mess up.
Right. It's kind of like, I'm just not going to cheat again, or I'm just not going to, you know, I'm not going to call you names, or, you know, yeah, it only gets noticed when you mess up all that goal. Mm-hmm. And just a quick mindset thing, because I know we could go on, like you said, for a while about this, but our subconscious is actually in control of 90% of what we do, does not understand the negative. It doesn't like say, okay, she says, I'm not going to get mad, so I'm not going to get mad. What the subconscious hears is get mad. It focuses on mad. Like that's the only part of it it understands. So that's why it's really important that we become proactive with our goals and our narrative. Any other things about that, about these passive?
Yeah. So like you use the word being proactive here. And I think that's really important. I think like in my marriage, one of the reasons why, you know, Jen and I can share a lot with each other is because we do have these underlying messages within our relationship. As an example, like my wife might talk to a friend and I'll want to hear the juicy gossip that might be going on there. But my wife understands. She's like, okay, you can't tell anyone about this. And at the same time, we're like, of course I'm not going to. We've had this track record over and over and over again that we share things and we protect what's shared. And we have this underlying message that there's high amounts of consideration and respect for these very private things that might be shared. We've even, you know, we get to a point where there's a lot of playfulness around these deep sort of topics that we have. You know, we can play around with it because there is a lot of trust there that, you know, what is shared between the two of us is really going to be, it's almost like a sacred sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my home messages that I crafted for my marriage was that it's safe to share. Like it's safe for us both to share. And so I would reward that when Ben shared, I would make that an emotionally connective thing. And that's a great time when you could bring on like a love language thing. His is physical touch. So he shares something emotional, then I reward that with physical touch, right? That makes it seem a little simplistic, but it is important to have our spouse's needs met. And so, you know, make it rewarding, make it fun, make it playful. Yeah. So that they want to keep doing it. Right. And you want to keep doing it, especially around those maybe harder things to go through, but it really makes it worth it. So I hope that makes sense. Yeah. And then that brings us to our last point here, which is shock, surprise, and changing the pattern. I personally am a huge fan of pattern interrupts because most of us are really stuck in patterns in our relationship. And sometimes they've been there for weeks or months or years, sometimes even decades. Sometimes the pattern that you might be in may have been there way before you were even married, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit with like a traumatic past, right? And so it's really important to realize that these patterns pretty much rule us, like our habits define us. And most people, we won't make big changes unless there's a really big need to kind of reevaluate things. Sometimes this doesn't happen until you kind of hit rock bottom, right? For so many of us, we kind of have to be like slapped upside the head in order to be like, whoa, what am I actually doing? This isn't functional. It isn't healthy. This isn't actually what I want to do. But for the most part, most of us are okay with just kind of maintaining this status quo, right? We just don't want to rock the boat, like I mentioned, right? We want to kind of sweep things under the rug and we just keep going around and around the same patterns. And so that's why it's really important that we look at how to interrupt these patterns. So Mark, what have you seen? Because we've worked with this idea of patterns that people get stuck in and the sudden wake up call of like, oh my goodness, I need to change something. And then we've also seen like resistance to change.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember a couple where they had a bit of a traumatic past. There was like a lot of really poor interactions with in-laws on both sides. The wife in particular was feeling very closed off. So we have the problem here. There's no emotional connection. And he was very, very much concerned with fixing the marriage. And he really switched things up by dropping the focus on reconciliation and simply focusing on healing instead. Here was this big sacrifice, this big gesture, and he was able to give that a lot of meaning in their relationship. I was able to talk with them something like a year later after I'd worked with them, and you know, they were still together and they were working through some of their problems still, but they were recommitted to their relationship. Another example was like where there was a couple where the wife was, well, she had stepped out of the marriage. She was seeing someone else. She wanted to have an open relationship and she was still asking for a lot of financial support from her husband while engaging in that situation. And in this case, the big shift, the big change in the pattern, like he was used to kind of unconditionally supporting his wife, and she just kind of expected him to go along with it. And we had to work on setting some boundaries and him being able to share how he felt. Like in that case, it was about him opening up and him speaking up for what he needed. And it wasn't until like he really set some strong boundaries that she really started to reevaluate what it was that she was doing. And so like I'm looking at this and I'm thinking like, what do we really need to really, really shift some patterns here? I personally think that, you know, first off, you do need a little bit of that shock or surprise. You need some significantly different behavior. But I think more important is making sure that you are creating a lot of meaning behind these significant changes. Too often, I see people who say, I see that you've changed. And the meaning behind it that they're taking is, the meaning is, you're just trying to win me back. You're just trying to manipulate me. You're trying to control me still. And, you know, we talked a lot today about controlling that narrative. But what I do when I work with clients is I say, okay, hey, we're going to have some significant events coming up here. We're going to have maybe court dates. We're going to maybe have someone that's moving out of the house. Maybe we're going to have an event where we have to tell the kids what's going on. Maybe if it's just something more minor and you're just trying to deepen your emotional connection, maybe you have other significant events like anniversaries, birthdays, or whatnot. And I say, okay, these are these moments where your partner is really going to be thinking about things. And how do we really build up a lot of meaning behind this? How are we going to have this huge impactful moment where we shift everything and we get the kind of meaning, the significance behind these things that we want? that's what a lot that we work on, to really kind of get someone to reevaluate things and decide that they need to make some changes. So,
yeah. Right. And so what that might look like, you gave some great examples, right? The husband that was just so focused on like reconciliation and instead chose to focus on some healing. The husband that was just giving his wife kind of everything chose to have some boundaries. You know, it might be that when you go to the court date, your husband or your wife is expecting you to blow up and be angry and, you know, maybe name calling, and or maybe they're expecting you to be mopey and a victim and begging and pleading, or maybe you're just sullen and withdrawn and silent treatment, right? That maybe that's the pattern. And so those are incredible opportunities to do things in a new way. When you do things in a new way, you get different results, right? So if you don't like where you are right now, it's really the culmination of a lot of these patterns that you've been in. And so all you need to do is start to shift things. Sometimes it's just a little few degrees. Sometimes it's a little bit bigger, but usually even just a minor shift is going to get you on a totally different trajectory. And so that's one of the things I love. It applies to all the different stages of reconciliation, and even in a healthy and generally happy marriage. It's still good to change old patterns, right? It's still good to say, this is the new story. I am going to be someone that is safe to open up to. I am going to treat you with respect and always. I'm going to have unconditional positive regard for you, right? Where this is really powerfully seen quickly is at the very beginning when, you know, we get a client in and most of them, you know, 90, 95%, 80%, whatever, a large amount of them are working on the marriage alone. Their spouse is pushing for divorce, wanting out, not willing to work on things. And so the first step is to have them hit the pause button. And we have them hit the pause button by changing the pattern. And so that's something that you do with your coach one-on-one, because the patterns that you're in, again, is like your thumbprint. It's just so unique to you. And that's why your coach is going to come in and assess, okay, what's going on? Like Mark will work with you, or our other coaches here will look at the relationship and be like, okay, here are some significant areas or opportunities coming up. Can we do things in a new way? And when you do them in a new way, it kind of has that element of a good kind of shock or surprise, right? We're not going to do anything like negatively or like dramatically or ugly shocking, right? It's not just, the point isn't just to like shock them or scare them. That's not the point, but it is to change that pattern, is to do things in a new way that we're like, oh, wow, Tom is really different today. Like, I thought he was going to be angry and blowing up, or he's not. Or Susan is like actually really empathetic. That feels different. What's going on there? And that gets them to hit the pause button, so they stop pulling away more, and helps you to really deepen some of that connection and solidify the new story that we can be close to each other. We can be safe with each other. We can have this deeper level of emotional connection. And that is what we specialize in. And so if you're wanting help with that, then please leave a comment, say me, or you can go to highthrivecoaching.com/apply so that we can start helping you to have your spouse hit the pause button, help you identify how you can start to change some of those patterns, do a bit of this pattern interrupt that's going to be the first step of changing the deeper narrative and the first step of deepening the connection that you're really craving. So if you want that, let us know. We're here and happy to help you. Wonderful, Mark. Any final thoughts on deepening emotional connection?
No, I think we pretty well covered it.
We nailed it. All right. Marriage Mythbuster. This one is children should come first.
Well, I can't 100% say that this statement is wrong. I can't say that. But I can tell you what happens when children are a priority over a marriage. I think that there tends to be less time to connect. I think there is less date nights, less coming together as a team. I see relationships where the children have been the priority. And in those same situations, I see spouses who feel unimportant, where children take sides with one parent versus another. For me, you know, personally, my marriage is a priority over my own children. My wife and I actually say this explicitly. We actually share it with our kids, for better or for worse, but we kind of like, we jokingly talk about this and we say, okay, we know this is our most important relationship. We still love all of you. and we want to make space for you, but we are going to have boundaries that protect our marriage from you guys. I think a lot of it depends on what your priority is and what you want with your life. If you want the kind of situation where in the end, you know, your children, you know, are going to have the same sort of relationships that you do, where they, you know, where they focus on their own children. Yeah, if that's like what is really important to you, fine. I'm not going to tell you that you can't put your children first. It does have consequences one way or the other. If instead that you really want a deep connecting relationship with your spouse, well, you know where you need to put your priorities. I personally think that there's a reason why, say, there's this idea of a starter marriage and like a secondary marriage. And, you know, why sometimes that second marriage can be a bit happier. And it's because usually the starter marriage, the so to speak starter marriage, tends to be a little bit more focused on the children. And that second marriage, you know, once the children are a little bit more grown, focuses more on the relationship. You can have that in your first marriage, right, if you really want. We don't need to have a starter marriage. I think that's a really poor way to approach things. So that's my two cents about that.
Thank you. Again, it's going to be a personal choice, and there's been some debate about this, but I've seen the same thing, that to me, it feels a lot healthier to have my marriage come first, and my children know that as well. And we also protect it with boundaries against our children, because children are amazing, but they're like little, you know, energy suckers. They will just take sometimes. And so it's really important that we have a healthy relationship with ourselves and our spouse. And so I've seen the same evidence as true, that those that prioritize their marriage have that strong foundation, and they model to their children how to have a healthy, functional relationship with their future, you know, in their future marriages, or hopefully marriage with their spouse. We've also seen the opposite true, right? That if they didn't have a good modeled, you know, their parents' relationship, then they tend to also go through a lot of heartbreak, and they go through a lot of struggle and a lot of instability and dysfunctional relationships with their spouse. Even though their relationship with their kids might be good, they don't have a good, healthy relationship with the spouse. So I think it's really important just to realize what you want to create for your kids. For me, I want nothing more for them to become functional adults and be madly in love with their spouse, not madly in love and reliant on me for the rest of their life or their own children. Because I feel like that is that, for me, that's what resonates as the healthiest and happiest. So thank you for sharing. And I hope this has been of value to you all. Please leave a comment. Let us know what stood out to you. If this has been of value, encourage you guys to share it with others if you feel like it would help them too. Of course, we put this out there to help as many marriages as possible. And so if you enjoyed this video, if you're on YouTube, give us a big thumbs up. And if you want to join our Facebook group, The Thriving Marriage, you can go look that up as well. And we're happy to have you guys over there. So next week, we're going to share with you 3 shockingly simple habits to make your marriage better. So look forward to talking to you about that. Thank you, Mark. And we look forward to seeing your guys' marriage thrive.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.